The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Joining me before any of it, though, is Paul Reid, the CEO of the HSE. Paul, you're very welcome to the programme, as always. Can you talk us through the latest figures in terms of the impact on COVID on our hospital system, Paul?
Good evening, Ciarán. Nice to talk to you again. Yeah, we've kind of seen over the last week, 10 days, steady rise in hospitalisations from COVID. So right now, as I speak to you, there are 95 positive COVID patients in hospital, with 23 in ICU. So it's up about 32% over the past week, 10 days, and been hovering around that number now for the last few days. So the reality for us is, from a hospital perspective, we want to continue our focus on non-COVID care as well. So we're watching it very closely. The reality of it is we won't really see the impact until the next few weeks because, as you'll be familiar, you know, the rising caseloads takes a bit of a lag period before you start to see hospitalisation. So we're anxiously waiting and watching to see, you know, does the current high case levels, you know, transmit to hospitalisations.
And listen, I know you and others have said that link between cases and hospitalisations has been weakened but not broken, so that there will be some impact. How long has that lag been in the past? I mean, when do we expect, or would you expect to see evidence of what degree that link has been weakened?
Yeah, traditionally the lag factor is probably about 2 weeks before you would see hospitalisation. So people would contract the virus, maybe have some sickness, maybe get advice from their GP, but then become more sick and need hospitalisation. So generally there's been about 2 week lag between rise and case. But I think, again, your listeners should take a strong level of assurance. The vaccination programme is working. It's working extremely strong. The benefits we're seeing from people who are strongly protected against hospitalizations, well over 90% if you have had your both doses and your period from your second dose. So, you know, there is a strong level of protection, but what we are trying to protect against is where we see a high level of cases at the moment. About 75% of the cases at the moment are under the age of 34. And what we want to protect is that we don't get what you just described as this breakthrough, where it gets to a certain level in the community, and then people who are fully vaccinated, you know, it breaks through, and we do have hospitalizations from those people too.
How many people in hospital today are fully vaccinated?
It's a small number of proportion, and this can change on a daily basis. You know, certainly when we looked at it last week, there were about 18 people who would have been fully vaccinated out of the total, 95, 96 at that stage. I wouldn't read too much into that at this stage because it is certainly too early to say, too early to make any judgments. You know, thankfully, we are coming off with the great work the public have done and the great benefits of the vaccination programme. We're coming off, you know, lower hospitalised numbers. So I wouldn't take anything as a trend right now from those numbers. But it is what we will watch very closely now in the coming weeks in terms of vaccinations, you know, people who have been fully vaccinated.
Yeah.
What we did look at very briefly, to come back to your question again, we looked at the period of March 25th to July the 11th in terms of ICUs, and there were about 131 ICU cases in that period. Vast majority, over 80%, were unvaccinated. About 5% were fully vaccinated, so just about 6 cases. So, you know, it's too early to call anything a trend at this stage.
Yeah, I suppose, because, you know, one of the complications, I assume, and you know this better than I, is that everything is relative, and in terms of raw numbers in hospital, you kind of need to know how many people who are fully vaccinated have been exposed to the virus to understand maybe, you know, what impact that number is, those 18 patients or whatever it happens to be in hospital fully vaccinated at the moment. I mean, if 1 million people fully vaccinated have been exposed and 18 are in hospital, that's one thing. If 1,000 have been fully exposed and 18 are in hospital, it means something else entirely.
Yeah, and I understand where you are, and you know, it's probably the bit of unknown related to Delta in particular. We do know already high transmission levels across younger populations, particularly if they haven't been vaccinated. We are watching the trends of, if you look in the UK, they did an early assessment of this just a couple of of weeks ago, Public Health England, and I think it was about 8% of their cases hospitalised were vaccinated. If we look at the testing trends that we're seeing at the moment, it varies between, probably varying between 7 and possibly 10% of the cases that are coming through are from people who have been vaccinated. But again, that's no surprise internationally in terms of the evidence, because you know, you don't have 100% protection against the contracting the virus. You have very high levels of protection after your second dose for hospitalizations, and hopefully strong protections against mortality in ICU as well. So, you know, vaccines work, well proven they work, just to reassure people. And anybody who hasn't had, anybody who has had the opportunity and hasn't come forward for a vaccination, you're really putting yourself at risk, and you reduce your risk very significantly by coming forward.
I know you and your colleagues as well will be looking very closely at the United Kingdom, where they've been dealing with Delta for a few weeks longer than us. So, you know, there maybe are trends there that we can identify. And there had been some promising trends, if we'll call it that, you know, promising with a little asterisk beside it, in Scotland and the Northeast, where cases had been looking really worrying, like that graph was flatlining in the wrong direction. But it had begun to plateau. What are you learning from the UK?
Yeah, what we're learning from the UK is there are different trends in different regions. So you are right, it certainly is looking more promising that Scotland has hit a peak and coming down, similarly in their hospitalisations. Other parts of the UK, not to the same extent, so still seeing some rising cases. So probably watching Scotland very closely from our perspective. And, you know, they still have some levels of restrictions in there, they haven't loosened to the same extent as maybe some part of England has. So watching closely with there, you know, you would take some encouragement from ourselves. We haven't opened up to the same extent. I know that's difficult for everybody, but it is a safer way about going to reduce restrictions in a managed way. And I think that, you know, hopefully puts us in good stand in the coming weeks ahead. But in summary, I mean, we are seeing rising cases. It's up 15% on last week. Positivity in the community now from our testing is 8.8%. So that's quite high overall, and 25% in some sites around the country. So, you know, and a high prevalence of younger people. But, you know, it's still a little bit of an unknown from our own perspective.
Yeah. You did describe earlier today in that press conference Delta as being that the final hurdle to jump. I mean, was that a triumph of hope over expectation? We don't know what variant comes next.
No, the point I was really making there, none of us know. And the one thing we know about COVID is every time we think we're around the corner, something else is out in front of us. But my main point was just we are in a different position now. We do have vaccinations very strongly rolled out. We do have 80% of the population, over 3 million of the population, partially vaccinated, and 66% of the adult population, 2 and 3 adults now, fully vaccinated, over 2.5 million. So that is a different position which we head into it. And yes, we all want to see the finish line. We all want to have our lives back in some level of normality. My main point was, in trying to get there, we do have this another big hurdle in front of us. But I did mention, and I mention again to your listeners, we should, you know, tackle that hurdle with reasonable levels of confidence. Firstly, the vaccination program is working. Secondly, our testing and tracing is scaling up and is surging up and is managing to stay with all demand, and we're putting extra resilience in it. And then thirdly, I think the response of the Irish Republic at all stages has been remarkable. I know we're all tired and we're all fed up, but I still do think people get it and know the risks out there. So my message would be, as the hospitality sector is opening up, and I welcome it, and we've been working hard to support it, as that is opening up, for people to really take care, whether it's indoors or outdoors, please continue to take care.
Can I ask you about the cyber attack and the latest on getting systems back up and running, Paul? What systems are still not back at 100%?
No, we're at a strong level now. If you take our total 2,000 systems that we have overall, we're in our hospital side, we're about 90% up. On our community side, similar. Still have some, and a lot of the public access to systems, like, for example, a medical card or reimbursement schemes, are all back up and accessible. What we have to take very carefully is kind of the internet access across and between our hospitals. So we kind of hospitals up and functioning with all of the national key systems, radiology, that and our labs are up and running. But interconnectivity between some hospitals is still a challenge for us.
Okay.
But pretty much we're on the far side of this now.
So are we talking kind of days rather than weeks before those systems get back up and running, or what's the timeline?
I think there's inevitably a lag in this, because what we are doing is we're monitoring very carefully as we brought everything back up to ensure security of it. We have now a service operations center which has 24/7 monitoring on our network to make sure. But there's always a lag period of weeks of some of these smaller systems. But you know, we are in a much stronger position. And can I just thank the public, and particularly thank our staff? This was an explosive impact, immediately stronger than COVID, because it all happened in one day.
Earlier in the show, we were talking about access to maternity hospitals, access for partners of pregnant women in certain situations, particularly emergency situations. And we heard from one woman, Rena, who had an awful experience 2 days ago in Cork University Maternity Hospital. Now, look, I absolutely appreciate, and the listeners do, that you can't know every individual who walks in and out of an Irish hospital, and it wouldn't be right for you to comment on individual cases. But generally, what is the situation there? Because a lot of these women, and we talk to them on the show all the time, too often, in fact, dare I say it, they're turning up at hospitals and their partners are being turned away when they expect their partners to be allowed in.
Yeah, firstly, I didn't hear Rena's case, but it obviously does sound tragic, and I'm sorry that did happen. What I can say is a couple of things. Look, I know this has been a level of frustration for women, for their partners, and has been a level of frustration for ourselves as well. There's two aspects to what we've been doing to try regularise this in a consistent manner across the 19 maternity hospitals. In the first instance, back in May, we wrote out 19 hospitals and set out that we needed a consistent approach to four aspects, which was one, the 20-week scan and facilitating partner access for a 20-week scan. Secondly, for scheduled visits, which are primarily postnatal 30-minute visits. The actual labour itself and a neonatal intensive care unit visits for partners as well. And that's the approach that we have been pushing. Now, what we did realise as we were trying to get that consistent approach, there were other aspects where partners were being frustrated, women were being frustrated, which was primarily around where there were complex pregnancies, where there's a need for early emergency assessment to be done in pregnancy, generally or in instances where difficult news might have to be relayed. So we wrote it further in July, and we had a discussion within hospital groups and set out that we wanted to see that facilitated. And I have to say, a vast majority, we see compliance in that. There are some restricted areas that have a real difficulty with that we're trying to work with them on. It's really related to physical infrastructure capacity that they have. I mean, many of your listeners know this. A lot of our maternity hospitals are extremely old, need significant investment as part of government strategy. So generally down to physical environment, where some hospitals have flagged it to us, they are putting in mitigation measures, trying to find alternative rooms.
Are some hospitals, though, claiming to be in compliance with the guidelines when they're not in compliance with the spirit of the guidelines? That somebody turns up at the front door of the hospital, it's quite obvious they're miscarrying, but officially they're not miscarrying until they go in and get a scan. And that's what they're told. Their husband or their partner has to sit out in the car park, and then once they get that diagnosis, then it's officially an emergency situation and he can come in. But the news is broken to them when they're on their own.
Yeah, and that's what we want to...
This is an awful situation, and it's utterly avoidable.
Well, that's what we want to avoid, and in a vast majority of cases, I do believe that's what we have avoided. Now, what I will say is that, our medical profession, consultants, doctors, nurses, have a very strong reputation internationally in maternity, women and infants care, and that's widely regarded. So I do know there's nobody maliciously out to try flaunt rules or relay some information back to us if it's different, because I talk to them regularly. But they are, I would just qualify it very briefly, and I know this is difficult, they are trying to manage risks. They do have to make judgments and risks locally in a very crowded infrastructure. And particularly at the moment, as we're dealing with a highly transmissible virus in young people, it's difficult. They have difficult challenges to make managing risks. But I, I understand frustration. We're working hard to get a level.
The people who are particularly frustrated are people with two vaccines, who from Monday, the two of them can go down to the local pub for a pint, but the two of them can't go into the hospital while one of them is losing their child.
Well, that's not the case across the board. I fully appreciate that you've raised cases and people are raising cases to you. But across the board, we have very significant levels of compliance with those visits that are set out, with those cases where it's complex pregnancies, with those cases where emergency assessments have to be made or difficult news has to be relayed. But you've obviously, and yeah, your listeners have obviously highlighted some cases, what? But I would say they are not the majority of cases.
Well, even for those minority of cases, what's your advice to those women? Because, you know, we're happy to speak to them and air their story here, but they shouldn't have to go on national radio. Where do they turn?
No, what I can say to them is personally, I'm taking this quite serious myself. I've had calls, I've made calls directly to hospital group managers where we have not seen levels of compliance. We have reporting infrastructure back into us to set out what the issues are, what people are mitigating against. We are taking it very seriously. I take it very seriously myself. I visited some of the maternity units to understand what some of the impacts may be. So I do want to reassure them on that.
Before I let you go, Paul, another story we were just covering during the week was this report commissioned by the Beacon Hospital into their vaccine scandal, if we'll call it that, and the decision to give leftover vaccines to teachers in a school, St. Jared's School in Bray. I know the HSE had commissioned its own report. When are we expected to see that?
Yeah, we did. We did commission it roughly around the same time as well.
Yeah.
Now, we have been and have communicating this publicly, we were significantly impacted by our own cyber attack because all of our share files were inaccessible for a period of weeks.
Okay.
We do expect, notwithstanding there were still some interviews going on, we do expect the report to be probably in about 2 weeks' time to be concluded, but it is at the final stages of drafting and clarifying some issues.
That Beacon report, of course, didn't deal with the elephant in the room, which is how the school was chosen. The HSE won't make that mistake, will they?
Well, look, let's report. I'm letting the independent assessor and person carry on through that report. She's a professional in this area, and you know, I certainly have let her carry on and do whatever and facilitate anything she needs from our perspective. And in fairness, I think we can have as well.
Paul, we appreciate your time as always. Paul Reid, the CEO of the HSE. Stay with us here on The Hard Shoulder. Plenty still to come. And after the break, I'm also going to tell you how you can get your hands on 30 grand by this time tomorrow.